Kammerflimmern und mediales Rauschen. Podcast für Medien und Wissenschaft. Von und mit Maike Bold und Anna Wiel. Produziert von Avinus e.V.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer weiteren Folge von Kammerflimmern und mediales Rauschen und unserer dritten Special-Episode von DIT, das Dokumentarische im Digitalen, eine Reihe, in der wir uns mit non-fiktionalem Erzählen in und mit digitalen Medien beschäftigen. Auch in dieser Folge wird es wieder um Fragen der Modi und Modalitäten von Interaktivität und Interaktion gehen, insbesondere um Co-Kreation und Partizipation. Aber wir werden uns auch mit Immersion und Impact und Innovation beschäftigen, sowie mit vielen anderen Phänomenen, die sich auftun in dem Emerging Field von Interactive Documentaries und Digital Documentary Practices. Und bevor wir hier ganz in einem babylonischen Sprachenmix-up enden und da das Gespräch mit unserem heutigen Gast ebenfalls wieder auf Englisch sein wird, geht es auch an dieser Stelle hier wieder nach diesem kurzen Hallo in deutscher Sprache auf Englisch weiter. So, welcome to this third episode of DIT, the documentary in the digital, a special series of our podcast Kammerflimmern and Mediales Rauschen. My name is Anna Wiel. I am the host of this podcast, and together with my guests, colleagues from academia and the arts, practitioners, and everybody else who is into the field of digital documentary, we discuss topical phenomena and tendencies in interactive nonfiction. Hence, I would like to invite you once more to join us on the exploration of the exciting emerging field of iDocs at the intersection of factual storytelling, documentary film, interactive media, media art, media activism, and many more adjacent disciplines. So hold on tight and get ready for the certainly, again, thrilling probing into the potential of interactive documentary configurations, taking the notion of iDocs beyond merely the interactive. Because, as Patricia Zimmerman remarked when considering the notion of the I in iDocs, the I represents a vortex of ideas spanning information, interactive, immersive, intention, innovation, and indeterminacy. This process flips the traditional vertical structures of media production into horizontal, iterative, never-finished modes that reify the user as a participant and co-creator. Hence, I am more than happy that today we have a guest who is certainly one of the most engaged researchers in the field that is affected by the various connotations and shades of the I and iDocs. Kate Nash. Kate is not only one of the pioneers in researching interactive documentary, she has also contributed to pushing the boundaries of theorizing digital media cultures and documentary cultures, looking at the iDoc not only from a film scholar's perspective, but from a much more comprehensive angle. As already in the first two episodes of this podcast, also this is a conversation which is based on the assumption that, although documentary has been a volatile and multifaceted phenomenon from the outset on, we are witnessing significant evolutions within this nexus of practices since roughly the 2000s. In the context of networked society and cultural techniques stimulated by so-called new media, documentary configurations have kept evolving and questionable new documentary practices keep arising. Keywords in this context are participation, collaboration, co-creation, and networking. But also issues of immersion and presence, performativity and procedurality, of embeddedness and embodiment, involvement, engagement, empowerment and agency, of hybridity, multi-cross and transmediality, of plurivocality, multi-perspectiveness and non-linearity. This affects not only the aesthetics of documentary formats, but it also impacts what doing documentary means. It affects documentary practices, the relationship between authors and audiences, user participants, co-producers, collaborators, as well as the attitudes and expectations as to what the documentary is. It affects notions of documentary evidence, documentary voice, and documentary's transformative potential. In this special episode, a conversation with Kate on topics related to her arguments in interactive documentary, theory and debate, we will especially focus on participation and politics. We will tentatively try to find possible answers to three major questions which are raised in this context. First of all, we will tackle the question whether emerging interactive documentary assemblages should be regarded as a continuation or a modulation of traditional documentary practices, namely documentary film with its specific impetus, or whether iDocs are rather a species of their own. Secondly, we will unpack participation, both as a concept with a long history and as a practice in emerging interactive documentary projects. And thirdly, we will relate all these issues to current tendencies in documentary making and politics of participation. Why does all this matter when it comes to concrete projects? What is the significance of interactive documentary in the achievement of citizenship? What can we say about the variety of strategies for convening publics? And how might interactive documentary connect with spaces of decision making? These things being said, and having thus somehow contoured the field, it's only one very small step to finally introduce Kate. As I already indicated, it's really an honor to have Kate here today, as Kate has not only been working on both documentary film and on digital media. She's also exactly investigating this relationship between documentary's tradition and documentary's future, documentary theory and actual practices. Probably this transdisciplinary approach is also due to Kate's professional background. Having come from media production, specializing in documentary, Kate focuses in her research on the production, circulation, and impacts of actual media, thus also documentary. Being one of the most renowned scholars in the field of interactive documentary, her research output is incredible, and a list of publications in this area is tremendous. To give you just a glimpse on the scope of issues Kate has been analyzing in this context in the last years, let me just drop some titles. Among others, Kate is the author of Modes of Interactivity, Analyzing the Webdoc, of Telling Stories, The Narrative Structure of Documentary Ethics, of Clicking on the Reel, Telling Stories and Engaging Audiences Through Interactive Documentaries, of Strategies of Interaction, Questions of Meaning. And she asks the question, what is interactivity for? The social dimension of web documentary participation. Together with Craig Hyde and Catherine Summerhays, she edited New Documentary Ecologies, Emerging Platforms, Practices and Discourses in 2014. Most recently, Kate has also tackled the issues of ethics and VR documentary. And currently, she is developing research in the area of health and environmental documentary, focusing particularly on engagement and impact. In her last monograph, however, after zooming in on these specific aspects, Kate again zooms out. In Interactive Documentary, Theory and Debate, which came out last year and which is still hot off the press, so to speak, Kate dares to ask provocative, deep-going questions regarding emerging practices in documentary making. And she dares to point out exciting possible answers, drawing on her rich observations of more than two decades of research in this field. So, thanks, Kate, for sharing your insight today with us. In her last monograph, however, after zooming in on these specific aspects, Kate again zooms out. In Interactive Documentary, Theory and Debate, which came out end of last year and which is still hot off the press, Kate dares to ask provocative, deep-going questions regarding emerging practices in documentary making, and she dares to point out exciting possible answers, drawing on her rich observations of more than two decades of research in this field. So thanks, Kate, for sharing your insight today with us, and hello, welcome.
Thank you, Anna. So it's a great pleasure to be with you.
Kate, may I jump right into the vortex of issues that our conversation will certainly be about? In your most recent publication about interactive documentaries, theory and debate, you state, there is a sense of profound change, of new possibilities and traditions overturned. And yet, in this really comprehensive monograph, you trace both continuities as well as turning points in the evolution of digital and documentary practices. Thus, you challenge those often tech-driven tendencies to approach interactive documentary primarily from the perspective of total novelty, of innovation and change. So let me ask right away, this may be a bit provocative question. Interactive documentary, evolutionary or revolutionary?
Oh, it's a good question, Anna. In the section of text you quoted there, you know, what I was trying to get at was the idea that things often appear revolutionary. We have a tendency to look at them as profoundly different, and yet actually when we stop and think about what's happening and what's going on, and when we also stop and touch base with the richness of our documentary past, we can actually find that things tend to look more evolutionary than revolutionary. So in answer to your question, I'd say both. There are aspects of interactive documentary that raise novel questions, no question about that. But at the same time, what I wanted to do was to caution everybody, scholars, creators, to not necessarily start with the idea that it has to be a total rupture. We can still say really interesting things about documentary culture and the idea of documentary by actually looking at how interactive projects extend, expand, and bring to the fore aspects of that culture that were always there but have perhaps been a little bit more marginal.
So if I understand you right, the way you are suggesting is taking interactive documentary by exploring both continuities as well as the ruptures, and above all, by way of documentary culture. Why this detour via culture, via documentary ecologies, as you put it in the title of the volume you edited with Craig Hyde and Catherine Summerhays?
I spent a lot of time wrestling with the question, why think about this as documentary? Why is this documentary? Why not think about this as a game? Why not think about this as a data visualization? Why not think about this as a VR experience? All of these things are possible. And yet, I wanted to approach them as a documentary scholar from the perspective of documentary. And so I really spent a lot of time thinking about, well, what does that mean? What sorts of questions are opened up when you think about something as documentary? So here I'm taking documentary very much as, if you like, an intellectual tradition, as well as a field of practice. And these are all bound together. And this is why I've kind of alighted on the idea of documentary culture. There are many dimensions to documentary culture. So obviously, on the very surface of it, we can talk about documentary as a media form that carries with it an inherent claim around what's real in terms of sense making, and that it shares with other media forms, like journalism being the most obvious. But essentially, there is some kind of, you know, sense making point of view claim around the real. At the same time, documentary is bound up with notions of desire and with its various social functions, and that is an important part of what I explore. People very often make documentary for a purpose, and that's very much true of a lot of interactive documentary work. So I was very conscious of thinking about, okay, what sorts of social functions might this work try to achieve, and how does that link to what went before, and how is that different? So that was an important part. And then finally, you know, what Nichols calls the domains of documentary, I think is really important. Thinking about what are the contexts within which this work is created and disseminated, be those, you know, kind of standard industrial contexts, be those emerging foundation funded or other funded contexts, be that activist contexts, lots of different contexts. But thinking about that, thinking about who this kind of growing body of practitioners are and how they connect with and don't connect with the people that went before. So I think documentary culture for me is probably one of the things I'm most excited about coming out of the book, because it's not an absolutely revolutionary idea. It's more of an evolutionary idea, but it allows me to think about this work from different perspectives, bring all that to bear, and not jump to too many conclusions about radical transformation. You know, we were very quick to say we need a new kind of theoretical toolkit to think about interactive documentary, and I'm like, yeah, sure, maybe, but actually, we've got a really vast intellectual tradition, and let's not ignore that. I guess that's my starting point as well. Let's not ignore that. Let's deepen that. Let's allow interactive documentary to enrich our kind of intellectual mission, if you like. So that's kind of where I was at in terms of thinking about culture. And there is the potential for some link to a media ecology's perspective, insofar as, you know, we might think about how forms of interactive documentary practice are integrated into our media practices. So one of the things is that, you know, it encourages us to think not just about technologies and what technologies can do, but to see those technologies as embodied within cultures and within ways of living that are also being transformed in the present moment. From that point of view, there's a connection. It does draw our attention to that. How does our present moment shape our cultures? So that's kind of, so it is multidimensional, which kind of feels a bit fluffy from a theoretical point of view, but I think it's the only way to grasp this work as documentary.
There were so many points in here where to jump in again. And I was wondering, what are possible dimensions of this engagement, of this interactivity, and in how far is this synonymous with a further concept, which we also announced in the title of this conversation, namely participation? Because there is also in the tradition of documentary, of course, the participatory moment. But is it different in interactive documentary, or let's call it emerging documentary assemblage?
So I think interactivity is one of those terms that's more interesting the more you dig into it, the more you recognise its complexities. I have found that really interesting. I think it's a very multidimensional term, and I try to get at the different dimensions of interactivity from the perspective of performance. I kind of approach interactive documentary as performative in the way that documentary has always been performative. It's always involved production practices. It's always involved, you know, practices of audiencing in different ways, and those can be quite performative, right, in some contexts. And I'm thinking, you know, around political documentary in particular, you know, being an audience for a political documentary is an incredibly physical and relational and performative process. Those ideas, this is what I talk about in terms of, or I think is really fascinating in terms of thinking about continuity, right? Because, you know, I'm clicking rather than being there, but what does that matter? So anyway, to return to the point, I think interactivity has many dimensions, and I try to get at it through performance. So what do I mean by performance? Well, firstly, documentary is a process. It's a relationship. It's a relationship between people. It's a relationship between people and technologies. It's an unfolding relationship. It's indeterminate. It's fluid. To understand that is to grasp those relationships as they play out in the digital domain. So that's the first thing. It's kind of this process approach. The second thing is it's experiential. It's about feelings of agency, of responsiveness, of dialogue, of immersion. All these terms become important from an audience perspective. But really importantly, and this goes back to that kind of, if we think about documentary culture and what is documentary culture, you know, in terms of truth claims, claiming the real and such, so on and so forth, it's about discourse. It's about making a claim. And so I've always kind of really thought that one of the most important tests of what interactivity means for documentary is around the discursive function of interactivity. What does interactivity do in terms of complicating discourse, you know, challenging singularities and things on that score? So within those three dimensions, from, you know, the fluid to the experiential to the discursive, I think that that's the way in which we might make the most sense of interactivity as documentary scholars, right? So this, again, this is about what are we doing here? If we're approaching this as documentary, then we're asking a series of questions about it as documentary, in which case I think that performance provides a way into that. So that's the first thing. Participation. Okay, really, really obviously linked in some ways, right? So it's, I think one of the most kind of striking features of interactive documentary is the idea of clearly I'm clicking on things, I'm making things happen, therefore I'm participating. Okay, so and that's fine and an important point to consider. But participation, unlike interactivity, is a series of questions about power relationships. All right. So participation asks us to consider how is power distributed through a documentary project? And this is something that, you know, has been a fascination of mine. And it goes right back to my PhD research, which looked at that kind of relationship between the filmmaker and the participant and asked us to consider what are those complex power relationships in that environment. It's really quite distinctive in terms of media production and really fascinating. So I see this very much as another domain in which to ask those questions. How does power play out in documentary projects? And I draw very heavily on the work of Nico Carpentier, who's done a huge amount of work on participation, including with a number of documentary examples, and drawing attention to things like identity, how people framed in relation to a project, right? Are you engaged as an expert? Mm-hmm. Or as a vox pop, you know, as we would say, you know, in terms of journalism, that shape, you know, how your contribution is going to be framed within a particular project. What's the organisational structure around it? So, you know, what sorts of contexts is the work produced in? What's the technology? You know, how's it used? What can you do? All that kind of really the stuff that's had the most exposure, I think, interactive documentary scholarship. Then things like notions of quality. Is it intended to be something flash and posh? Is the outcome more important or the process more important, to take it back to that really kind of, you know, that participatory video kind of terminology, which one's more important? But then there's a lot of work in the field of interactive documentary that is relevant here, you know, so from Sandra Gaudenzi's work on the what, where and when of interactive documentary, to Patty Zimmerman and Helen de Michelle's work on meaning communities. We might talk about discourse and knowledge. So there's some great work around that and verification and interdisciplinarity. You know, how is it that different disciplines come together? You know, there are lots of different examples we could talk about. In terms of something like identity and...
Maybe let's just jump here into some examples, because there were so many aspects again. We had the relationships, that it's relational, a power issue, and this makes it clear why we are talking about documentary cultures and ecologies and not so much about technological features when it comes to interactivity. Well, let's try to open this black box then and look at certain aspects. Because from what you explained, there follows a cascade of further questions. The ones you mentioned by Sandra Gaudenzi as to the who, the what, and the when of participants' agency in respect to the documentary project. Who participates? What can they contribute? And when does this happen in the life cycle of a project? And then there was the question of power. So maybe let's speak about power a bit more. If we think of participatory practices in documentary making, is this a further death of the author? If we take, for example, a interactive documentary such as The Corona Haikus, which is also by Sandra Gaudenzi and Sandra Tabaris-Dugand, which we talk about in the first episode of this podcast, who can be attributed to be in the role of the author in such a co-creative Facebook documentary? Or if we take a project such as Goa Hippie Tribe, who has got the power to speak there?
Those are really, really great examples and really interesting. So, okay, Goa Hippie Tribe, it's about 2010, something around that. It's a project to document the experience of Western hippies in Goa, in India, right? So people who dropped out. It was made by the son of one of those hippies, and this son goes back to Goa or connects with the folks from Goa that his father knew. It really tries to capture the characters, the experiences of that period. So it began on Facebook, and it began because the hippies themselves had started to reconnect on Facebook. So it really built on something that was kind of already happening. And so the project starts off with a kind of, if you like, crowdsourcing. Here's a really interesting thing. You know, we think about the structure of documentary, how the structure of it works to make a point. Well, actually, the structure of this initial documentary anyway, which was a series of interviews that were kind of released on Facebook weekly, was all structured around building audience. All right, so a very different approach to what you might think about in terms of documentary structure. And people were coming around, you know, music, around the drug scene, around spirituality, different kind of topics. To go back to your question about authorship, so the claims were being made by people who posted on the Facebook site, you know, oh, I remember this, I remember that, this happened, that happened. And people would jump in on that. And, you know, go, oh, yeah. And I was really fascinated with the way that language played out. It's got hippie language, which I didn't really know much about. And I enjoyed immersing myself in this hippie language. People would write things like boom, you know, boom, you know, and really important things. But that was important to the verification process because, of course, you were either part of this community or not part of this community. And if you're part of this community, that language becomes a really important part of how things are verified. Relationships were a really important part of how things were verified. You know, to go back to thinking about documentary's process, the process is on view in a way that is different to film and television documentary because you can actually see the process unfolding. And that provides opportunities for more collaborative verification. Does that mean the author is dead? I mean, the author has been dead for a while anyway. I mean, you know.
But he's a zombie in some way, popping up again and again.
I don't know how helpful. Now, let me rephrase that. The concept of authorship is helpful and the concept of voice is helpful because it does actually encourage us to be critical of what we see. So, okay, fine, people can engage communities and those communities can collaboratively verify stuff. Is that the beginning, middle and end of what's happening in terms of authorship and voice? It was framed in a certain way. It was, you know, there was still a very strong kind of authorial presence. So I'm really fond of an idea that I borrow from my good friend and colleague, Trish Fitzsimons. Trish Fitzsimons on the braided documentary voice. I think it's quite a helpful way of thinking about interactive documentary projects, that there's a central kind of what we would normally have called the author, but there are also different ways in which other voices become part of it. It's very related to the idea of polyvocality as well as an ideal.
Absolutely. And what Judith also points out when speaking about polyphony and about metamodernism, I think the concept of voice that you brought up is really a key term here. Voice as also a form of empowerment in some way, of participation in different dimensions. Mm. How does this link to democratic ideas then? Because what Henry Jenkins, for example, describes partly euphorically at the beginning is that within this creative and egalitarian open participatory culture, as he calls it, there's this democratic culture unfolding. And Clay Shirky speaks about here comes everybody in the title or in the slogan of his book. And actually, if we look at it a bit more closely, it's not all that rosy at all. Kat Zizek, for example, and William Riccio and their co-researchers in the MIT report, Collective Wisdom, also point out participation and co-creation, as they call it, can easily become exploitive. And thus, they underlined the importance of clearly defined agreements and relationship making, relationship building, community building, that helps to mitigate against this extractive participatory dimension.
I think it's a really, really interesting and very, very important, perhaps the most important ethical question facing interactive documentary makers is relationship. And to go back to the example of Goa Hippie Tribe, since we were thinking about that, you know, one of the ways in which I think about the early stage of that project is that it was about crowdsourcing information on Facebook that then actually they didn't have to employ researchers to do the second phase of the project, which was actually a web documentary and a television documentary. Well, they had all this material that the community had given. So actually there was an extractive dimension to it. I think that's really, really important. Agreements are fine, but I think agreements tend to reduce the complexity of lived experience down to simple questions about who owns what and where. I'm into the messiness of the relationships. And
well, let's call it dynamics.
The dynamics. Okay, the dynamics are good. I like that. It's better than messiness. I just see that when I was thinking about the relationship between the documentary maker and the participant and people were saying, let's write codes of ethics, and I was like, how can I codify this? This is a complex interplay of, you know, give and take between two people. How do you codify that? My tendency is to get lost in the messiness of it all. So I think agreements are important, but not where I'd like us to stop. I'd like us to go further to understand the complexity of this relationship. So to go back to where we started, so we talked about participation, and participation is a concept around power. I talked about it primarily in relation to the documentary project, who has power within that project. But of course, participation is also a concept that has currency within political theory and is central to how we think about democracy and what we want to achieve. So I've often talked about people's voice within a documentary project and then how that might connect with or not connect with people's voice beyond a documentary project. Because in my experience, people participate in documentary for a lot of different reasons, but very often the reason is because they want to say something about a topic that's important to them. And also what we often claim is most significant about interactive documentary, there's a slippage. We jump from, well, they can participate in the project to therefore they have a voice. And I'm like, maybe and maybe not. And how do we separate out those two questions? So I spent a lot of time in the book thinking about the political dimension of interactive documentary and how we might get at those questions in a nuanced way. I take a lead from those cultural scholars that have thought about citizenship as something to be achieved rather than something we already have. I spent a lot of time thinking about, okay, so how is it that interactive documentaries might help to support people to become citizens? So we don't all start out with a kind of confidence to say what we want. We don't have a sense of ourselves as citizens. What does that mean? What's our political identity? And interactive documentary is really fascinating in that regard because it bridges the private and the public. It's like a lot of digital things do. One of my favorite examples on this score is Fort McMurray. So Fort McMurray is really interesting, a documentary game. It tackles the issue of the exploitation of the oil sand in Alberta, Canada. It looks at the social, the environmental costs of that. But it positions you as a citizen and it asks you to, with a lot of other people, actually enact a form of democratic decision making. Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of sim city in some way then.
It's definitely simulating something of a particular kind of democratic experience. And I'm kind of critical of that, the way in which democracy is being performed mm-hmm. there, but it's fascinating for that purpose, right? It starts out with a particular ideal of what democracy is and embedded in that an ideal about the relationship between documentary and democracy, all right? So actually you go into Fort McMurray and what do? Well, you start out by watching a whole lot of videos. And with those videos, you gather and unlock information. And then the point of the exercise is you are meant to then take that to participate in the game part of it, where you actually try to convince others by using the information you found in the documentary. So it is a vision not only of how democracies should work, but how documentary ought to inform publics to come to a collective vision.
So we've got the strategic aspect, we've got the epistemic aspect about knowledge gain, information, and then applying it and participate and do something with it.
I think participation in that sense is probably like, so I don't say something is participatory or not. I look at how participatory it is. What are its participatory intensities? How participatory is it? I'm not sure that I would describe it as massively participatory. Mm-hmm. It depends, I guess, how much somebody feels empowered by it. But certainly it addresses you as a citizen. It addresses you as an agent. You know, you have agency within this virtual environment. It gives you a range of different ways in which you might participate in that environment by voting, by speaking, by, you know, all sorts of things. So it invites you to perform the role of the citizen. Now, why I think that's important from the point of view of interactive documentary's political role, I'm not going to suggest for a minute that project has changed the debate around the oil sands or anything like that. You've got some media coverage. I certainly tracked that and had a look at it. Fine. But mostly it was about the novelty of the project itself, not about the issue. But what I think it does point to, it points to the potential for interactive documentary to nurture citizens, to provide spaces for people to see themselves as citizens, to speak as citizens, to relate to others as citizens, to build their knowledge base. And I do think there is something in that that would be deserving of further scholarly attention, actually, because I think it's overlooked when we think about documentary and citizenship. We do tend to think, like that project does, too much about information. Thinking about citizenship as something that is achieved something we have to work at, actually says, well, hang on, no, we can think more broadly than that. And we should think more broadly than that. We should actually think about the different ways in which interactive documentary provides us with those experiences, those opportunities to develop as citizens. You have to listen to others. You have to engage with others. You have to accept that there are people you don't, you know, all the values that are fundamental to democracy, you kind of have to engage with in that project.
That's really, really such an important point, because at this moment, we really link the theory to the practice. So why this all matters? Because anyway, a documentary theory might be interesting sitting in the ivory tower. But anyway, where does this bring us to? And here we can see how it functions.
Just to jump in there, and I would love to see documentary makers working with academics more. There are some great, don't get me wrong, there's some great practitioner scholars who bridge both camps. But I think there is really something to be gained from having that kind of theoretical voice feeding into projects. So, you know, if you do things this way, can you see how this is links to a certain ideal of democracy?
It must be kind of multidimensional, transdisciplinary, having scholars in it, practitioners, but also the citizens themselves or the people who are going to become citizens or reappropriate their citizenship through the project. Well, this matters in lots of dimensions then. We've got convening publics. We've got the decision-making, because in Fort McMurray, for example, you've got to vote and decide, yes, we do it, or no, we don't. And also about identity in some way, about individual as well as communal identity. Who am I? So again, lots of ideas. Maybe we could start with the citizenship. We already touched upon it with Fort McMurray, but there are lots of projects that are not so game-based, participatory in the sense of crowdsourcing. For example, if I think of 18 Days in Egypt, which was about the Arab Spring, would you say that this was a way of achieving citizenship? Because often it was said that this revolution would not have taken place without digital media.
Yeah, that is digital media important? Absolutely important. But I'm not going to go so far as to say that, you know, it brought about political uprisings that wouldn't have happened in any other way. But 18 Days in Egypt is an interesting project for so many reasons around citizenship. It raises some really interesting questions around voice too, actually, that take me back to Bill Nichols' work in 1983 on voice. He is arguing at that point that, you know, the voice of the filmmaker needs to be controlling within the space. You can't just put an interviewee up there and allow them to speak, because ultimately it's up to the filmmaker to call their contributions into question if that's warranted, right? So you know, have to be the arbiter. You know, it's a point that I think we've really quickly gone away from in terms of interactive. I think it's really important. How do we know what's true? How do we know how to frame and interpret? Again, to go back to the idea of collaborative verification, the filmmaker has not looked at all the content that's on that platform. It's just there's so much there, and there are things there that might be true, might not be true. We don't, you know, it's really, really.
Who knows what is true?
Well, exactly, and from whose perspective, and all sorts of things. So there, you know, really is complicated. I think, though, one of the things that was most significant about that is the way the project actually engaged Egyptians as citizens and engaged them as historians, documenters of an important moment in their country's history, and provided them with a means by which to express what that moment meant for them. It's also interesting, though, because we create communities. I love the expression convening communities, because it really reminds us to be skeptical of this idea of, oh, I went out to the community. But what is a community? A community, you know, there's lots of community-based and local projects. You know, one of the things I'm really conscious of is that, you know, a filmmaker lands in a place, lands in a community, goes to Egypt and engages the community, but the community doesn't pre-exist the project. The community is created by the project. And that practice of community convening or creation has a power dimension to it as well. Some people are included, some people are excluded, right? It doesn't include everybody. And those inclusions and exclusions reflect power relationships that exist before the documentary project begins. Interactive documentary makers spend time trying to build communities around their projects. And I really love Red Tails, which are squirrels. And I live in the north of England. And in the north of England, there are, well, in England generally, but particularly in the north, there are two kinds of squirrels. There are grey squirrels, which have come from North America, and there are red squirrels, which are native to the UK. And the red squirrels are very rare and very under threat, because the grey squirrels are everywhere. all right, they're doing great guns, thanks very much, but the red squirrels are threatened. And so Red Tails is a great project because it went to a squirrel conservation group and engaged this topic through interactive documentary and participatory projects. And there's lots of thought about what participation meant here, but really interestingly, the team has written about and reflected on the process of participation and how that was structured and you know, really fascinating to look at how working with one particular group in that space meant that some people didn't want to participate because there's lots of different, it's a hotbed of political kind of disagreement, squirrels. You know, so some people are into culling the grey squirrels to keep space for the red squirrels. Other people are not. All sorts of things like that. Really, really contentious. And so the moment you went to one group, you alienate another group. And I think that's something we don't often reflect on when we make interactive documentaries or documentaries, actually, because this is the same in any situation. And you can't see it because it's off the frame. So that's why I think that it's really great to have scholars working with documentary makers to kind of understand these dynamics and to contextualize this project. It really makes a difference to understand the project if you think about the dynamics of these relationships and the way in which the community was convened around the project.
It's interesting that you speak about a project and not a documentary.
Yes.
Because here we've got the process dimension, that it's all about the making, the doing, and the networking or whatever, and not about a fixed product that should come out at the end. So
very often the case in participatory projects more generally, because of course here the idea of documentary blends into the idea of participatory media, participatory video, participatory interactive stuff. And in that domain, as we know from Challenge for Change, right, so there's that kind of big debate about is it process or is it product? And I think it's really important. The more you weight towards process over product, the more participatory something is likely to be. Because you give participation greater weight than product. The more you're concerned about the product and what it looks like and making sure it's high quality, then the more you're likely to have professionals involved, you know, get expensive technologies involved, you know, have processes that alienate people.
When we talked about the voice, we only highlighted one aspect so far. We spoke about the contribution, but we didn't speak about we touched about it when we talked about community building and who is the community and how do we define it, but we didn't talk about the listening.
Yeah,
because so far we have got mostly concentrated on the production, on participation as an active process of making, of contributing something. But when we look at the epistemic dimension, but also this community building function, where does listening come in?
So to my mind, ultimately, listening is fundamental to politics, right? Speaking is pointless if nobody's listening. And I think that's, you know, an overlooked aspect of interactive documentary. And, you know, there's some great work on listening in participatory projects generally that kind of finds that people are encouraged to say various things, to speak their experience, to give voice to their challenges, and then nobody listens to it. So I think that connecting media generally to spaces of listening is absolutely fundamental. And I guess an interesting example of that is the Kipu project, which is a project to document the ongoing impacts of forced sterilization in Peru. And what's interesting about that is that it's a project that has considered not only how people can speak, providing a kind of free phone line for people to phone in and tell their stories, because these are people who are dispersed geographically and very isolated and not, you know, massively endowed with technology. So giving them a really easy VoIP kind of line to phone in and tell their stories is great. But it's also really key to the project that phoning in becomes a route to listening. You can phone in and you can listen to others' stories. And not only that, if you tell your story, you can see that others have listened. You can send a response. It registers listening in a visual way. And it's also got the web part of it is very international in its orientation. It registers global attention on this subject. Understanding the impact is difficult, but I think it's really interesting from the point of view of interactive documentary because it actually does show how an interactive project can be different. So to go back to your revolutionary point, how it can be different because it provides ways in which to register the act of listening within the project itself, within the text itself. And that's really quite interesting.
Wow. Now we've come full circle some way. Well, this example of Kipu, the aspect of speaking, of listening, of voice, of interaction about the political, that has nicely summed up all the issues we've been talking so far. I think it has also shown the importance of avoiding this technological determinist thinking in the context of iDocs. It has shown the genealogy of interactive documentary and the traditional documentary practice. It has made us recognize in some way, again, the need of differentiating intensities and dimensions of interactivity, of participation. And it has also drawn our attention to participation rather as a continuum and not an either-or option. And so this Kipu project and all the other projects we have touched upon, they really plastically illustrate the fact that participation, and especially this transformative, this change-making, agency-making, empowerment participation involves both the individual, the personal, even the very private, but above all, the societal and even the globally political level. This last example has brought us back to the point of departure of our conversation somehow. The question of interactive documentary as a maybe not so revolutionary, but a highly volatile and evolving field. So taking all these aspects together, where might this all lead us to? As a final question, so to speak, what does the future of interactive documentary look like? What does the future of documentary look like? And what does the documentary of the future look like? Or if I might even dare to ask, what does documentary for the future look like?
Wow. Okay, so I'm not one for crystal ball gazing massively, because I think that it's very difficult to see the future from the present. That's kind of the point. But I think there are a few things to note. I think there's an inherent fragility to interactive documentary. I don't think it's found its place. I think it's an experimental space, and that's why I find it fascinating. I'm studying this not because it's the next big thing. I'm studying this because it's experimental and because I think that the questions that we can ask about media and about documentary from this perspective are really interesting and distinctive. If I was to say, what is the future of interactive documentary? For me, it's about this continuing space of exploration and experimentation that picks up on some of these questions. And in terms of scholarship, I think the way in which scholarship might link to production, because it is fragile, and I think that we can work more closely together, but questions about politics and political engagement could be very well addressed through interactive documentary. And there are organizations that would be interested in exploring interactive documentary as a means by which to nurture citizenship. But the future of it lies in joining the dots and collaborating better. I'm not massively into technology. I'm not following the latest of, you know, what's happening here and there and everywhere. I'm more interested in the kind of the fundamental questions. So from that point of view, I think the fundamental questions continue to be really, really important. And I think that interactive documentary can make a huge contribution to thinking about these big kind of social questions, both through scholarship and through production.
Thanks so much, Kate, for this really, really insightful conversation, all these inspiration and impulses. And I feel that as things will certainly remain exciting in the field of interactive documentary, it would be really wonderful to take up one or the other train of thought of today's conversation in the nearer future, not too far future.
That would be great.
And so thanks. Thanks so much.
No worries. Thank you, Anna. And yeah, I hope to pick it up soon.
Did you realize something? Though the series of special episodes carries interactive in its title, it seems that interactivity might be only one aspect among many interdependent aspects of what is relevant in speaking about emerging documentary practices. And though we initially took the digital as the point of departure for the series, yes, we set out to explore the documentary in the digital, we ended up discussing much more universal issues which are currently at stake. So it remains to be seen whether interactivity will still be the decisive interpretation of the I in iDocs. Probably an issue that we will take up again in the following episodes. I hope that you all stayed on up to this point. that you have not been deterred when we started drilling into the complex theoretical concepts. And I hope that you will tune in again in July, when we will release the next episode. In the meantime, you are always welcome to follow latest developments on the world of the iDoc on the DIT Project website. For today, have a good time and take care.